Hello and welcome back to the Pure Vacations podcast. This is episode 4 and you're joined by myself, Dan Pratt. I'm the Chief Operating Officer for Pure One Group. Wesley Baker, who's the best-selling author and CEO of Pure One Group, and also Mark Young, who's the founder of Gobble, which we will talk to you more about in a few minutes. So on today's show...
I grew up with gorillas, seeing them up close.
I was once described as a wounded moose.
I don't think anyone's even thought about it, is the noise at nighttime and how everything comes alive.
Yeah, so... is probably what you would have heard quite a few times. So very similar to that of a hippo.
You wake up in the morning and there's some elephant footprints or some lion footprints, you know, in the dining room.
I did make a bit of a joke, even though I'm not a comedian, I was quite proud of myself for this moment.
Journey with us to the corners of the earth, where stories come alive and dreams take flight. From the bustling streets of Tokyo to the serene shores of Bora Bora, every destination has a tale, and we're here to share it. Brought to you by the man who's trekked the peaks, dived the depths, and explored the vast expanse of our beautiful world. Here's your captain for today's adventure, the seasoned traveler and the voice of voyages, Wesley Baker. And alongside Wesley is Dan Pratt.
So thank you to everybody for joining us today. I really appreciate your time again. I hope you've enjoyed the last 3 podcasts. If you haven't checked them out already, you can do so. Go to the Pure Vacations podcast site, which is on purevacations.com, and you'll see all of the previous ones there. You'll be able to see the links and stuff. And there's thousands and thousands of articles around travel inspiration as well. And that's what we're here to do, is to inspire travel. So today we are joined, as I mentioned, by Mark. And Mark is a seasoned travel expert. He's represented many different places all over Africa. We're going to be talking through lots and lots of interesting, cool things today. So we've got on the list Botswana, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, Tanzania. It's going to be a really exciting episode. And today's special is all around safaris, wildlife, and that sort of thing. As you know, each episode has a different theme, and today's theme is safari. So I was lucky enough to go on my own one back in 2019. I went to South Africa and that was brilliant. And we will be talking about South Africa further on. So if any listeners are wondering why we're not talking about that, that will be later on in another episode. But today I'd like to welcome Mark on board with our podcast. So I really appreciate you being here. So if you'd like to tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, what it is you do, and give a bit of context to today's show.
Brilliant. Cheers, Dan. Hey, Wesley. Hope everyone's good. A bit about myself. I've worked in the travel industry for sort of coming up for sort of 18 years, I think it is now. I don't always look back and work out the exact number of years. Predominantly has always been on sort of Africa and Latin America, sort of the main areas I've focused on over the years. I think Africa offers so much. I just feel at home when I land there, so I felt like I had to work on that continent. I've worked for different companies over years. I've worked for Trailfinders, I've worked for Hayes and Jarvis, Discover the World, as well as smaller companies such as Croatian Villas. So I've worked in various different roles, from sales to product, obviously jumping into the operational side of things and every other part, and contracts and pricing and customer complaints. So I've worked in most departments at some point and got a good cross-section of how the travel industry works, I guess.
That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit about your business? So your business is called Gobble, and if anybody listening wants to check it out, have you got a website address, URL that you could provide?
Yeah, I do. So yeah, my company is called, official title is Gobble UK Representation, but obviously it's always just called Gobble. I do get asked why it's called that, to be fair, and it's basically, I wanted a really memorable name. I didn't want to call it Mark Young Represents, because that's just boring, or I don't know, just some sort of, you know, funny name. But I just wanted something weird that people would remember, because being a rep and representing companies, which is ultimately what I do, you need to be memorable in some way. So whether it's me, whether it's the company name, whether it's what I wear, whatever it is, something needs to be memorable. So that's where the name Gobble came from. I do have a website. It's www.gobbleuk.co.uk. That's where I list all my clients, information about that you can gain from them. Admittedly, in the repping world, the website isn't the most important part of your company. Unlike, if you're doing sales, for example, you might need a really important website. Mine's more there as a holding page to show people, but then the work is done away from the website.
Fantastic. So yeah, so we're going to have really deep diving into the area of Safari today, which I'm super excited about. So yeah, so I'd like to say welcome again, Wesley. Pleasure to have you back on as always. So how are you doing?
Very well. I thought you'd forgotten me, Dan. I really thought I was forgotten in this conversation. I mean, the beauty of Mark's business, Gobble, is that it represents such a range of exciting products. And I think, that's what we're going to be covering today. Some wonderful, wonderful destinations in Botswana, Kenya, Uganda, Rwanda, and Tanzania. All of those are fantastic. And he has some incredible facilities there that he'll talk to us about in a moment, that I think the listeners will enjoy learning about and understanding what it's actually like to go in a safari and the different standard of safaris that are out there as well, and what you get. So I'm excited to be here today. I think the listeners will enjoy it as well, Dan. So over to you again.
So when it comes to safaris, just explain to our listeners. I know everybody is aware of what a safari is to a degree. You go in a little jeep and you see lions and the big five potentially, but there's more to it than that, isn't there? That's the thing. That's kind of the typical safari, but there's more thorough safaris. There's more off the beaten track safaris. There's more niche safaris. So do you want to talk to us a little bit more about that our listeners may not be aware of?
Yeah, to sort of give a general overview. So yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, everyone knows, as you say, what safari is. You go out there, you see some animals, you come home. As a general gist of it. But the way it's done, where you see, the type of animals you see, the type of safari you want to go on, can vary from country or from national park, or even how it runs. A safari in South Africa is very different to a safari in Kenya, for example, in terms of the way the government manages the land and things like that as well. But generally, so yeah, the way I suppose the traditional safari would work is you'd obviously fly to whichever country you're going to, picked up from the airport, and then generally flown to whichever part of the country you're doing your safari in. And then that will be on these light aircraft, which might be, two, four, six, eight, 12 seats, for example. So it's quite a cool experience just from that. If you're scared of flying, they're not the best things in the world for you, admittedly. But they are a great way to get in there quickly because it's, 1 hour in the air versus 6 hours on the road, for example. And then you get to your lodge, and again, the difference between lodges, whether you're doing a camping lodge all the way through to the incredibly lush five-star boutique lodges, even the size, there's some with six rooms, there's some with, 30, 40 rooms hotels as well. Obviously, it's all about price. And then the general basic is usually most people will do a safari drive in the morning, get taken out on the vehicle, see whatever there is to see. The guides know what they know what's there. They know how to find the animals that are in that area. Obviously, there's no guarantees. We always have to, anyone who sells animals, sells, not sells animals, that's something very different. Anyone who sells safaris will know never to use the word, you're guaranteed to see X animal. But they'll take you out, then you'll come back, have a nice relaxing afternoon in some lunch, and then go out for an evening drive as the sun's setting, because generally the best time to see the animals are just after, sort of around sunrise and around sunset, because that's when they're hunting. And that's generally when they're out a bit more active. And during the day, at midday, it's too hot for the animals. The cats and things, some of these places can be 30, 40 degrees at some, sometimes a year. The cats are hiding. They know not to be out.
I think that's great, and Wesley's got a question in a second, but I just want to say when I did my safari, it was exactly that. We had one at 5 in the morning, saw the sunrise, and then in the evening. But I did make a bit of a joke, even though I'm not a comedian. I was quite proud of myself for this moment. So we were going down the road in this jeep, and I saw a herd of zebras come. Somehow they sort of start coming towards the jeep, and then we were on like a little bit of a road. And all these zebras kind of walked in front of the jeep, and I did have to, I could not resist, but said, "Oh, zebra crossing." But anyway, Wesley.
Well, that's his own fault for having that job, isn't he? He should know. He's going to hear that every time he goes out.
Okay, yeah, my point, I just wanted to clarify really for listeners that have never been on safari before. You talked about the internal flight aspects of it, which is normally a Cessna type plane. People often worry about, you know, well, is that an extra charge? So they have to organise that flight. Normally that's done internally with the when everything's booked with whatever company they're booking with. It's all a part of the safari package, isn't it? And that I'm correct in saying that in that
absolutely
it forms a part of the bottom line.
So whichever company you book your safari with, they will work with, I mean, not everyone, but the majority of the way it is done is they will work with what we call a DMC, destination management company, who is the actual person on the ground in the country they're going to, who make all the logistical plans. So, you know, they're booking, whether it's Pure One or Trail Finders or whoever you actually book the holiday with, they've got a company on the ground called a DMC who make all those arrangements. So the price you're paying at the, you know, literally when you pay for your holiday, that should include the lodges, the transfers, the flights, the internal flights, every part of it. And then, of course, I'll tell you about anything excludes, which usually is meals in some cases, and that's drinks and that type of thing.
Then I'm going to get down a little bit more details before we get onto your destinations, because obviously I'm really eager to find out all the details and pull your experience together. But from a person that, say, for example, someone who hasn't travelled on the safari, what happens with the luggage? You know, what type of luggage should they be packing, first of all, in the size of the luggage? Because, you know, if you've got the average person that goes to Spain, or Italy or Greece will have a suitcase, a normal hardback suitcase, or soft if they've still got some of the older ones, and they're plugged out with 14 days worth of t-shirts and 14 days of night evening shirts, and 17 pairs of trousers, and really they'll only live in a pair of shorts most of the time they're there. But the reality is, how should someone pack for a safari in Africa in general? And also if you could sort of discuss how your luggage gets around. Is that something that they have to be worried about? These are just silly little things, but I think to the listener, it's important before we start talking about the exciting destinations, they understand how first of all, the internal flights are done. We know that now. But what about the luggage stuff? Because these are questions that they would be thinking in their minds. Well, what do I pack?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think most people know when you get an international flight, you're probably getting about 23 kilos per person is generally the sort of the average. And, you know, when you're flying to Africa, you're going Kenyan Airways or Emirates or whoever it may be. And we generally, the advice is soft-sided suitcases. So big, hard suitcases we all see, you know, when you come back from Spain, they're not good. They're fine on the international flights, but they don't work on the domestic flights, the little Cessnas that we talked about, because there's two sides of it. There's space and there's weight. So generally, your luggage allowance will be less on a Cessna. So you might be able to take 23 on the international, but you won't be able to take 23 on the domestic flight. Depending which airline you're going with, it will say, you know, exactly how much. Sometimes it might be 20, it might be 18. It will vary. The company you book with will have to give you the exact details on the exact weight.
So what type of bag should they be taking then?
Sorry?
What type of bag should they be taking?
Soft-sided. A soft-sided bag. Something that can basically be squashed. So at the back of the, you know, on the Cessna where they put their bags in, they will push the bag in. So you need something soft. So you don't put your camera in there, your breakables. You take a hard suitcase on holiday because it protects your stuff. That you'll carry is your hand luggage, your cameras, etc. on these planes. But you need soft-sided so they can squeeze in. And it's not just the plane. It's also even the safari vehicle. You know, if you're doing a drive to the place rather than a flight, there's still limited space. And what they can't have is one person who's got a massive suitcase that takes up a lot of space, it's hard-sided, that they need to be able to ram it in, basically. So you never put too many valuables in there because I'm not going to say they're going to throw it around and kick it or anything like that. They're not doing that. But they will need to put it into a smaller compartment than on a big plane.
Cool. So just to summarize, you book one of these safari trips. That includes everything. Your transfers, your flights, your holiday, the actual entrance to the safari grounds itself, the actual tours. It basically covers everything. You don't have to book anything individually.
Park fees, No, I mean, unless it's specified on the thing. So again, if you book some of the cheaper safaris, maybe you're doing an overland bus, for example, type safari, then there will be excludes. And generally the cheaper it is, you've just got to keep an eye out just to make sure they're not cutting corners and things like that. But if you go to, we all know the reputable agents out there, it will all be included, and you'll literally just have one payment, one booking, and it will all go through, and they would have taken care of everything. But just check your paperwork, as we always say, as I remember from my sales days, just always check what's the included and excluded button section of that paperwork.
That's what I just wanted to summarize, because if it says flights, yeah, some people might be a bit worried. For example, I know my parents, for example, would be very anxious about that connection flight. So I just wanted to make sure that was abundantly clear to anybody listening that is all covered.
No, you can't. I don't even know how you'd go about booking connection flight, if I'm honest with you. So, yeah, it will all be taken care of by the agent.
So, yeah, Wesley, you have another question.
We do. I wanted to get on to Botswana, actually, Mark. I've been desperate to ask you about this. So, tell us about what's going on in Botswana regarding what you represent and the product there, and what you feel about Botswana as a destination, and how popular is it becoming to the British market?
So Botswana is an interesting one to start with, and I say that because majority of people, when they go, I don't know, they decide to go on a safari and they walk into their travel agent, or they, start Googling online. Often Botswana isn't the first country people think of, and often if it is, they will have quickly moved to another one. And the reason being is because Botswana has basically got the most expensive safaris out there, especially when you compare it to South Africa or Kenya. I mean, pretty much the whole of Africa, to be honest, apart from maybe Rwanda and Uganda, which we'll touch on later anyway, as we mentioned. Botswana is beautiful. I mean, it's completely open. It's got a very different landscape to the rest of Africa because it's got the Okavango Delta, which is a huge area of water, whereas a lot of course, Africa is dry. So you get this different experience with the wildlife, and you can go on hippo, go on mokoros, which is like a wooden canoe, basically, out to see the hippos, which you can't do in other countries because they haven't got the water. So that's a really cool, different experience. Botswana itself has, like I say, it's less visited. The tourist numbers are lower. It's a little bit not trickier to get to, but there aren't any direct flights, for example. You can fly into Kenya directly. Botswana, you're probably flying down to maybe Johannesburg, or Addis Ababa, those places, and connecting on. Obviously, there's a few different options, but it's not a direct one. But it's a beautiful country. It's got some amazing properties. The wildlife is phenomenal. I actually camped when I was in Botswana. I did it very differently. Camped on the Okavango Delta, which is quite unnerving at times because you're there and all you can hear is hippos sneezing and snorting around you, and it's not going to take a lot for a hippo to knock down a tent, but they don't come near you. Like honestly, they're just in the distance, and you're kept very safe.
That's
In
a bit
terms of
like Dan, really. Dan does that a lot. He sneezes a lot.
I was literally just going to say that, and in the past few episodes, people probably have noticed I've had a bit of a cold, and yeah, so is probably what you would have heard quite a few times. So yeah, very similar to that of a hippo. In fact, actually, when I do
I wanted to
sleep,
point out.
when in fact, actually, I sometimes it's been known that I snore from time to time, and I was once described as a wounded moose. So yeah.
Well, you'd fit
Okay.
very well in if you're sleeping next to hippos, then you're absolutely fine. and
Well,
you
not
do
really,
hear, I mean,
because
that's the other thing, actually, just in terms of sleeping on safari, you will hear, whether you're in a tent or whether you're in a fancy lodge, you do hear noises throughout the night. A lot of people actually bring earplugs, people have done it before, and particularly people who are light sleepers. And they're really cool noises because it's the animals making noises. It's what you're there for, to a large extent. But if you're looking for these super quiet, peaceful nights, it's probably not the place to do it because you're going to just hear all the animals at night. I mean, even if it's just bugs buzzing around, or elephants snorting, or cats roaring, lions roaring, it's a really cool side of it, which I think a lot of people don't appreciate or aren't
I
aware
was
of
going
until
to,
they get there.
yeah, I was going to say that sounds really, really interesting, Mark. And I think one of the things, I don't think anyone's even thought about it, is the noise at night time and how everything comes alive, but also the skies as well.
Oh, yeah.
The sky must be incredible. I mean, is it out of the destinations we're covering today, is Botswana great for the skies, would you say, or are they all the same,
I
really,
mean,
in
to
that
be honest, they're
respect?
all very good at it across Africa, particularly when you go into the, whether you're going to the Mara, whether you're going to Botswana, the Okavango, whether you're going to Kruger, wherever it might be, Serengeti. You got to think, all these places aren't populated. Yes, there are safari lodges, but there's not many of them. And in the grand scale of things, there's not many of them. So there's very little light pollution. There are rules on about the amount of light these places can give out and stuff. But at night time, if the sky is clear, the clouds aren't there, you can see so much. You have seen stars like you haven't seen stars before, and they feel like you can touch them. I mean, I was out in, where was I? Sorry, I've been on a few trips this year. I was in Tanzania earlier this year, and at one point, honestly, the Milky Way was right above, and it felt like you could
Wow.
touch the Milky Way. What was really cool about it was, in a few hours later, when you got up in the morning, you could still see it. But of course, because the Earth has turned, it's 90 degrees from the angle it was before. And it's one of those few times in life where you went, oh yeah, the Earth does turn. You sort of forget like that's actually happening. But like, it was like this physical thing. You can think, God, we have turned. It's amazing.
That sounds absolutely incredible. And let's talk about the elephant in the room. We've talked about hippos, we've talked about zebras. So we'll move on to elephants, obviously, which there's been some stories and some videos of elephants charging at people and things like that, and obviously other sort of attacks and so forth. Like I said, when I was on my safari, I was in a jeep and there was a lion walking right next to us, and I did think, there's a lion there. And I said to the guy in front, like, do you have a weapon and to protect us? He's like, no, we don't carry them, it's fine, we're all good, it won't come near the car. Which, so just to give our listeners a little bit of sense of security, because I was a little bit apprehensive, but I know it's completely safe now, and it is safe. So just for anybody that is concerned about, like you said, sleeping in a tent, hearing lions roar.
I never want to use the word completely because I think that's slightly misleading, if I'm honest with you. It is very safe. You've got to think these camps, the people who work at the lodges and the hotels out there are there all day. They're trained to spot anything. They know exactly how to deal with the animals and the distances they should keep, all that type of thing. But it is wildlife at the end of the day. Now, attacks are incredibly, incredibly rare. But of course, you still have to be cautious. When you go out, I mean, the good thing is if you're in a vehicle, for example, you're in a big jeep, lion, for example, can't determine you in a jeep. It just sees a big mass. So you're not, it's not going to attack a jeep. They just don't. If you stepped out, it'd see how small you are and vulnerable you are. So you have to be careful. So again, I mean, I remember seeing one a video of a guy on safari sitting there, and he was hanging his arm out the side of the vehicle, and it was obviously far enough out that a lion was approaching from behind, and you could see the lion had clocked the arm. And then there was another vehicle nearby, and they shouted, and he obviously realized to bring his arm in. But he was, potentially, because he'd put himself outside of the vehicle. So you always got to be a little bit sensible and remember. And I think a lot of people forget that these are dangerous animals. They're beautiful animals. They're amazing animals. Like, being close to them is phenomenal. But in their area, they're head of the food chain. That's how it works. So you'll always be protected. You'll always be safe. But you also just don't forget to plug your own brain in, which I think a lot of people do forget on holidays.
That's exactly it. It's like, if you've got a bit of wit about you and have respect for the surroundings, and that, then I think it'd be fine. Like you said, so anybody listening, there we go. Just it is safe. Never 100% guaranteed, but nothing is. Driving your car is never 100% guaranteed
Exactly.
safe. But just a bit of wit about you. Follow the advice from the crew around you, and you'll be fine. So yeah, Wesley, another question from you.
Indeed. Well, I just wanted to sort of wrap up Botswana there. So what we've learned from Botswana is that it's a different geography to the other destinations. It has a lot more water in that respect, a lot more plainy areas, and it's the most expensive destination to go, probably, but and a more challenging to get to, however. But it is also a destination that is worth it, and the experience there is less crowds, although you don't get many crowds on safaris. So the next point would be, let's move on to the big old favourite, or I say the old favourite because it's the one that everyone always thinks of, Kenya.
Well, we can't wait.
talk to us about, or unless you want to mention, because you I know obviously you represent someone in Botswana, Mark. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit. Yeah, tell us a little bit about that first, who you represent and what it is in Botswana, and then we'll move swiftly on to Kenya afterwards.
The lodge I have in Botswana is called Camp Kwai. And while I was talking about price at the beginning and saying Botswana is the most expensive, and it is, there are ways of doing it cheaper, shall we say. So somewhere like Camp Kwai is a 4-star property, not a 5-star property. Their figures per night are, I won't go into exacts, but like, you know, they cost three, you know, they're 3 figures a night, not 4 figures a night, for example. And the reason that something like that's a little bit, you know, in the hundreds rather than the thousands is because they're outside of one of the national parks. So it's just outside Mwemi, which is then all then leads onto Okavango Delta and stuff. And being outside the park brings the cost down. So that's a really good way of doing it. And the camp I represent, Camp Kwai, you know, it's a 7-bedroom lodge. So it's really small. One of those is a family tent. The others are just sort of classic double bedrooms. It's on a floodplain. But there is water generally throughout the year, unless there's obviously a major flood going on in the country, which, you know, does happen from time to time, but generally it's okay. So it does mean there's wildlife generally in front of the property because it's got the water nearby. And then what they will do each morning, they will take you into the national park to do safaris there. And that's a way of keeping the cost down. And there's two types of people that get there. There's people on lower budgets, and I use lower loosely because it's still Botswana. But there's people who can afford the ridiculous numbers, but they also just don't necessarily want to have to spend thousands of pounds a night anyway, even if you can afford it. So it fits for two markets. But it's a really cool little property, only been open about 3 years. And it just offers a slightly different way of doing it and helps keep the budget down a bit.
Does it have a swimming pool or anything like that? Is it? Do you need a swimming pool? Does it have any issues with bugs, like spiders and snakes?
I mean, I'd always take mosquito spray. I mean, that's always recommended for everywhere. Even if it says it doesn't have them, you know, you go to a malaria-free place, you can still get bitten by something. So I'd always have your bug spray. Going back to what we were talking about earlier, the safety side of things, there are two different types of lodges. And, you know, if someone's particularly concerned about their safety, you can get fenced and unfenced lodges. Now, the majority of properties I work with are unfenced. And what that means is literally there isn't a fence around the property. So the lodges are there, and it means animals can wander through, you know, as they please. Generally, they don't, because the animals stay away from the lodges because they know there's people there. They don't come up to you. But it does mean, you know, I've known it before. You wake up in the morning and there's some elephant footprints or some lion footprints, you know, in the dining room, because you can just wander through. So then for people who are maybe a little bit, and from my point of view, that's awesome. From other people, like when I took my wife on our first safari, you know, she felt a bit uneasy by this. So you can book what's called lodges that are fenced. And that literally means they've got essentially a wire fence probably going around the perimeter, which stops any animals coming actually through the property. So you can feel
would prefer to have a open, because I think that's the enjoyment of it. I mean, if you're going to see the animals, you know, you want to be there and really experience. I mean, I couldn't think of anything better. You know, you're opening your door, or you're coming out your tent, or in this is a lodge, so I'm assuming you have it in rooms inside. But if you were, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I would have thought that's a fantastic situation. You walk out and you're going out for a midnight snack and find there's an elephant in the restaurant.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. You pop to the loo and there's just a lion sitting there next to the bathroom.
I can send you some video links to literally places that I work with where they have lions, just someone sitting in the restaurant eating dinner and the lions outside the door just looking through. now, that's I should point out, that doesn't happen all the time, but it is.
It's come for dinner. That's what it's come for.
Exactly.
Dinner bells ringing.
but no, it's really cool. And also what they'll do, just going back to the safety thing, at night, generally walking between, you know, the main lodge bar that they would have and your room, you'll get walked back with a guide. And the guide, in most cases, will probably have a rifle with them. The rifle isn't designed to kill the animals, but if anything comes close, it's designed just to make a big noise, generally to scare the animals off. Just to, you know, and it's, I've never known, I mean, I've probably been on 50 odd safaris, I don't know these days. But I've never known anyone need to shoot a rifle. I have heard a story about a man getting charged by a rhino, but I probably should save that for another day.
Do you hear it? The world is calling. From untouched beaches to the heartbeats of age-old cities, Pure Vacations is your gateway to authentic travel experiences. We don't just take you to destinations. We dive deep into their soul. Into their soul. With expert insights, local secrets, and mesmerizing tales. Mesmerizing tales. Our online travel blog is your compass to the world's wonders. Pure Vacations. Discover. Explore. Be inspired. Your journey begins here. Visit purevacations.com.
Let's hear about Kenya now. You only do one property, so you only represent one property in Botswana, correct?
Only one property in Botswana, yes.
Okay. So how many do you do in Kenya?
I've got three. They're part of the same group.
Okay, great. So you can talk to us about that. Well, tell us about the difference of a safari in Kenya, what a safari in Kenya is about, and then tell us about the three properties that you do there and what's unique about them and why the listeners should consider going to there.
So Kenya, I would say, because it's got the Masai Mara, which I think is probably the most well-known, most famous safari place in the world. You know, it's had a very good PR over the years. You know, their Serengeti and Kruger are probably the top three. So the majority of people who probably look at their first safari probably think, oh, Masai Mara, let's find out what that's about. The Masai Mara is probably the one place where, and as I said earlier, never used the word guarantee, but as close to guaranteeing to seeing the animals as you possibly can. You know, it's a very good starting point. You know, there's a lot of animals. It is open, so the animals can obviously move around, but there's just a really high possibility of seeing the lions and the elephants and the hippos and the giraffes and the zebras. Like, there's just a really high success rate. So if someone just wants to have a really good safari with almost the best chance of seeing something, Kenya is a great place to go for that. Relatively easy to get to as well, because you can do direct flights into Nairobi. So it makes it sort of, you know, a little bit more accessible.
Can I just pick you up on that? When people go on these safaris in Kenya and they arrive in Nairobi, is it advisable to have a night in Nairobi or two nights in Nairobi before going on the safari? Or is it quite common that people just get them? They connect or they get picked up at that point? And then how does that work? Do they get picked up, or they've, because Kenya's a big country, or they've flown off to at that point? I just would understand, like to understand, as I'm sure the listeners would, the actual logistical side of it, of here I am arriving with my bags and got the wife as well. And where do we go now? What happens as I come up, go through immigration?
I think it would generally depend what time you arrive. So the flights into Kenya generally land late at night or early in the morning. So if you're landing on one of the later ones, you know, I'd probably say any time landing after 3 o'clock, I'd probably assume you'd probably do a night in Nairobi, because then to the distances out to the parks, whether you're driving it, whether you're getting the train, whether you're doing a light aircraft, probably would have stopped by that point. By the time you got through immigration, got out your airport, driven to the other train station or the domestic airport, you know, at that point, get a night in Nairobi, catch up on whatever sleep you've missed, and start the following morning. The other airlines tend to land sort of 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. So what you can do from then, this is the way I usually do it when I go out there, is I get picked up by, you know, obviously, as we were talking earlier, but it's all part of it and part of the package, picked up from the airport, picked up from immigration, and then usually you'll be driven either to a hotel where you can go and get some breakfast, you know, some agencies will include that, or they'll take you straight to the domestic airport, which is only about a 40-minute drive away, especially now they've built a new road. And then you might have an hour or two wait there before your flight out, but it depends which part of the country you're flying to, you know, exactly what time your domestic flight will be. But I'd say late at night, do an overnight, early in the morning, you can carry on. It would just be your preference. But
that's such fantastic information, Mark. Honestly, that really is information that the listeners will really enjoy understanding, because a lot of people don't understand it. It deters people when they're not sure how it works, but you've just explained it in a nutshell. And I think the key there is arrive early, and your ground representatives will look after you. They'll either take you for a breakfast and then transfer you to the domestic internal flight, which will take you on to wherever you're going. And that's it in a nutshell. So then tell us about these great places. You've told us that basically Kenya is a one-stop shop for everything you're going to get. So what about these destinations that you do, that you physically represent? Tell us about this group and why you like them so much.
So the group is called Secluded Africa. And there's sort of two takeaway points from them. They're called Secluded Africa because their properties are in quiet, secluded places. One of the big things with the Mara, because of what I said earlier, it is very popular and it can get quite busy. And there, I'll bring this up. There have been videos recently of, 30, 40 vehicles around an animal. And that's not good for the animals. It's horrific for the animals because it's too many people. And also it's bad for your own viewing experience, because you're just sitting in a traffic jam, basically, looking at what is probably quite a scared animal at that point. So the way Kenya's set up is they have their sort of open and national parks like the Mara, and then there are separate places where people own conservancies. And conservancies are, so the national park, anyone can drive into, basically. You can even do pretty much a self drive into it, which is not advisable, by the way, because you can't see anything. You don't know what you're looking for. But you go to a conservancy, and these are quieter areas, all part of the Mara National Park, but it means there's a limited number of people who can go into these areas. And the only people who can go into the areas are the people who have the lodges. So Secluded Africa have one on the edge of the Mara. The animals wander freely between it. There's no fences, no gates, there's nothing. So you can only see these animals here and those animals there. And they've got the same with another park called Tsavo, where they've got their own private conservancy as well. So that means you can get your game drives knowing there won't be other people around you, or be very limited people around you as well. So for example, the one in the Mara, they share their conservancy with one other property, which means, and it's, I forget the exact size off the top of my head, I'm always really bad with numbers, but the chances of even seeing their other vehicle is incredibly remote, let alone having a traffic jam. And then the same with the one down in Tsavo. And the good thing with these, when you've got a conservancy and a national park, it means you can do your safari in both areas. So you can go into the national park where everyone goes, the main part. But if it's too busy or you're not seeing what you need to see that day, you can come back to the conservancy and have your game drive there and get a different experience. So they've got two of those, one just on the edge of the Masai Mara and then one just on the edge of Tsavo National Park. So you've got Tsavo East and Tsavo West. And they are literally divided by a road down the middle of it. But these are massive areas. And Tsavo is different to the Mara. One, it's not as well known, so you just got a lot less people there. A lot of people won't know Tsavo. Two, all the plant life is different. So the Mara generally is quite green and lush, particularly in the wet season. Tsavo is actually, it's a lot more red dirt. It's not as lush, there's a lot less trees, particularly on the east side of it. You'll actually see a lot of the elephants are covered quite red because they're covering themselves in red dirt to protect themselves from the sunshine. It's a lot drier than the Mara as well, so it can be harder to spot animals because there's less water.
Your knowledge, Mark, is, I have to come in here, your knowledge is incredible. I mean, I'm really enjoying listening to this. It's just,
likewise.
Covering themselves in the red dirt and I'm visualizing it very much. These lodges, they sound like they're ideal. In fact, that to me, that sounds like the perfect sort of trip to Kenya, because you don't want all the crowds. You want to do that. So, are they moderate? Are they luxury? Do they have like swimming pools? Do they have tents? Or what's the actual lodges like themselves within this group?
So lodges and star ratings is always a little bit tricky generally, but you'd probably put them into around sort of like the higher 4-star category. I wouldn't put them into the luxury, not because they don't do fantastic. I mean, and compared to a luxury, like they give you all the best service. They are luxury in terms of that experience. You know, the service, the food, their attention to detail, and then the tents are probably falling into sort of more around a 4-star. Very comfortable, very nice. But they admit themselves, you are here for the wildlife. You're not here for the bed sheets, right? Like unlike some safari lodges where it is very much a statement of I've been to X lodge, but it's not about the animals, it's about the lodge. Here it's about the wildlife and the experience. And one thing that they do, which very few other companies do, and I'm talking about even the really super expensive lodges, every single booking to a secluded Africa property gets their own safari vehicle. So there isn't any sharing with other people, which means you can do your safari at your pace. So if you want to stay at an animal and just carry on watching it, carry on watching it. If you're finished with that sighting and you want to carry on and find another one, then you just ask the driver to move on. And that works brilliantly because the majority of places, even if you're spending, two, three times what a secluded Africa lodge costs, you're still sharing a vehicle in most cases. And while there's nothing wrong with that, it can be annoying because you want to see something, but someone else in the vehicle doesn't want to, or vice versa. This way, you can do it at your own pace, and if you want to be out all day, or if you just want to do a short drive, it works perfectly.
Yeah, I remember when I was on my safari in South Africa, there was this couple. It was quite a premium place that we went. We were only there for 2 days, so we had I think four safaris, 2 mornings, 2 evenings, and that was it. We didn't get out the vehicle. They were very quick safaris. Each one lasted about 1 hour to 2 hours, something like that. But there was a really luxury 5-star resort in the middle with a swimming pool, loads of food, and it was kind of like a bit of everything. But anyway, there was this couple, it's that saying, all the gear and no idea. There's a couple that arrived, and they clearly spent a fortune on all the beigey green like trousers, shirts, hats, hiking boots. They were stood in front of the Jeep, like with their arm on it, having their photo taken, all for Instagram and stuff. And they sat in a Jeep, got driven around for 2 hours, got back out, and then went to the luxury 5-star hotel. And it was so hilarious to see how there's different types of safari. There's like a proper safari where you're camping, you're like you said, you're in with the animals, you're getting bitten by mosquitoes, you're like actually in with it. And then there's that. And but yeah, it was just hilarious. Like they must have spent 400 quid on gear just to literally sit in a Jeep for 2 hours.
Well, I once heard a stat, and I have no idea if this stat is true or not, but it sounds true enough to me. I won't name it, but there's a fancy lodge in Kenya, and I've heard only 30% of people who visit it actually go out on safari.
Wow.
Like I say, it's just anecdotal evidence, but it sounds about right because they're paying to be at that lodge, not to be on the safari.
That's so good. That's so good to know. But so just for anybody listening, we will go, we've got the other three to go through as well. So we will be coming crossing those, and we'll be getting through the show. So we've got Uganda, Rwanda, and Tanzania to come up. So yeah, Wesley.
No, that's what I was literally going to say. Let's move on. I think Kenya's sold it. It's certainly sold it to myself, and I understand the lodges. They're fantastic, and they've done a good job there, Mark, of explaining that. And I think if we could go on to Uganda, I like saying it like that because I knew Mr. Mabula from Uganda, and I love saying that. So Uganda and Rwanda. A lot of people don't still think of Rwanda as the atrocities that happened before there, but at the end of the day, Rwanda is a beautiful place, and it's I'm amazed how forward it's become. It's a wonderful place to visit and see. And I was watching only the other day a cycle race going through Rwanda, female cycle race, I think it was, and it was fantastic world championship race, and it was fantastic, and the roads and everything, and I was taken back by it, and I thought, wow, this place is really special, very hilly as well. So I thought we'd go on and discuss these as well. Well, unless I've missed anything on Kenya, of course.
Just one point to mention, the coast on Kenya as well. So partly because Secluded Africa have a hotel on the coast, but I think it's worth mentioning for those people who want safari, often go on a safari, then a beach section
So
to
a
the
twin
holiday.
centre. They do a twin centre. They do a
A
safari and
twin
then a beach
centre.
holiday. Yeah. Okay. And they do the beach
Yeah,
afterwards or
so
before?
most people will do 3 days to 5 days on the safari, then go to do a week on the beach, something like that. So do a 2 week sort of overall. I've
Okay.
always thought it's better to do the beach first because once you finish, you're doing whatever job you got, you fly overnight. You land, your safari starts at 5 a.m. You're knackered anyway. Like you haven't even got over your life in the UK. And then you're on safari and you're going out all day. I've always thought start with the beach. Have a few days just to get over whatever's going on in your life, then go out
Get
to
that
the animals.
relaxation into your
Majority of people
system.
don't.
Yeah. get all that relaxation
Yeah,
in your system
exactly.
all the way through, and then go on to Safari, which then means that you actually remember it more when you're coming back.
Yeah, because one of the first things you get on Safari and they go, right, we're getting up at 5 a.m. to go out. And the last thing you want to do, you're excited to be there, but you don't want to be up at 5 a.m. on that first morning of your holiday. But I mean, 90% of people will do Safari first and then Beach second. Excuse me. And I think majority of agents who actually, their job is to sell these holidays will always push it that way. But there's nothing wrong with doing it the other way around. And I should also mention on the coast, again, some people have heard sort of a few bad things about the coast over the years, and there have been a few issues, shall we say, but it's very calm, very quiet, has been for years and years and years now. The coast is beautiful. It's those golden sands and the big blue seas. And again, you've got your range of hotels, your 3 stars to your super luxury properties. Majority of places, again, Kenya works well because you can buy, because it's probably, again, for Africa, probably the easiest place to combine safari and beach, because it's just a short flight or even a train ride, depending where you're coming from.
But you do have that option also in Tanzania as well, which
You
we can
do,
come
but you'd
to.
fly out to Zanzibar. So it is slightly different, but it's also a cool thing to do. It's not harder, it's just a slightly different way of doing it. So the hotel we've got, I'll just mention it briefly, it's called Cardamom House. And again, it's in a quiet area. It's actually away from all the hotels. Generally, in Mombasa, where you would fly to, you'd go to Mombasa and you'd head south, and that's where the hotels are. Our hotel is actually to the north. I think it's about 45 minutes from the city centre, but traffic can be a bit indifferent. But then it's just a very small, but it's a proper 5 star. As I was saying, the hotels are, the lodges are more around the sort of higher 4 star. This hotel is a 5 star. It's got everything you'd expect. It's got the masseuse there, the personal trainer, the incredible food, but it's right on front of the beach as well. So it's just but very peaceful because there aren't any other tourists in the area.
Well, that's super. Okay, brilliant. So swiftly moving on then, Uganda and Rwanda. What are your feelings about both of those? What do you offer there, and how different are they, and where should they be in someone's list of safaris? If they're thinking of, because it seems to me that there's a lot of differences going on here between, certainly already we've heard between the difference between Botswana and Kenya. What's the difference between Uganda, Rwanda, Botswana, and Kenya in that respect? And and also what properties do you have there, and your feelings about both?
Well, the big thing with Uganda and Rwanda is something you haven't got from the others, which is gorillas. And this is the big thing. This is their big selling point. It's the fact that they have gorillas. And even in my opinion, I think they push the gorillas, not too much, but everyone knows the gorillas there. They're not pushing the other side that they have in the country. But seeing the gorillas is a phenomenal experience. I was lucky to do it myself a couple of years ago. I did it in Uganda. And that's why you would go, because you want to see the gorillas. You get to trek to the gorillas. And this is a really cool experience. Basically, the way you would do it is obviously you'd fly into Uganda, you do whatever you're doing. Again, most people will go to the gorillas first. A lot of people, I actually always think maybe do the gorillas last. Again, because then you've got that excitement to come, but people can do it in whichever way they want. But I think it's important to say how the gorilla process actually works in terms of actually seeing them, because what it isn't is like a drive round looking for them and then sitting in front of them for as long as you want, like you would do with lions or elephants. It's actually a hike, so you don't need to be super fit. But it's a steep area. You're in a forest. It's a very hilly country, a mountainous country. And so you'll go to, there's a few different areas, but generally the impenetrable forest, it's an easy word to say. And then you will hike. And the hike can be anything between an hour to 4 hours, depending where the gorillas are. They're quite fast moving. The guides generally know where they are. There are spotters in front of the gorillas pretty much 24 hours. That's for their safety, like to essentially an anti-poaching team to obviously keep them safe. And then you will hike to them, and then however long it's taken you to find them, you then have 1 hour with the gorillas. It's an hour maximum. So you'll sit, you'll keep your distance. I think it's 10 meters is meant to be the gap that you keep from the animals. Of course, sometimes the animals come a little bit closer to you because they don't know the rules. And then after that hour, that's when you will hike back. So it's a very different way of doing it. And that hour does whiz by because you're just sitting there watching these amazing creatures. But it's just worth understanding how it works differently to the rest of safari across Africa.
I think that's incredible, and like seeing gorillas in the wild up close, it's that must be an absolutely incredible feeling. Like you said, so different as well to the other types of safaris. This is going back to my original question at the beginning of this podcast: is you people have in their mind what a safari is? There's so much more to it than just driving around in a jeep in a traffic jam, like you said, in various places. So yeah, no, absolutely amazing. So yeah, if you want to go into a bit more detail about Uganda and Rwanda and talk to us as well as the animals, but yeah, about the logistics and as we did with Botswana and Kenya earlier.
Yep, sure thing. So obviously the gorillas are the number one. That's why most people go there. They've seen David Attenborough or whatever it might be, and that's a big thing. But Uganda in particular does have a lot more to offer. It's really opened itself up over the last few years. There are safari areas out there, so you can see the big five. They've got tree climbing leopards out there. Shall I start that sentence again? So there are a lot of things to do. I mean, you can do the safari. They've got the big five. They have tree climbing leopards, which you don't get in anywhere else, actually. So they're really cool. Unfortunately, when I was there, I didn't see a single leopard up a tree. But that's the wildlife. They're not there on your schedule. They're very much on their own schedule. But you've got places like Jinja, spelled Jinja. That Jinja. Where you can do things like whitewater rafting. They've got waterfalls out in Uganda as well, so you can go off and see the waterfalls. The towns, the capitals are very like they're just really expanding and growing. They're just really nice people as well. I mean, I think in general Africa, and I mean obviously this is a generalization, but people in Africa are very nice. They're very friendly, and they're generally happy to sort of welcome you in. And I found nothing but like sort of happiness when I was out there, to be honest with you. It's really, really cool, and it's more accessible now than it used to be as well. There are Ugandan Air, Rwanda Air, for example. You can fly from Gatwick straight into Rwanda. That's not something that's been going on for me. It started, I believe, just before COVID, and then got taken away again, but it's now come back. You can also now connect the national park. So one of the a really cool trip you can do if you want to do everything is you can fly into somewhere like, say, the Masai Mara, do the big five in Kenya, then take a flight and fly over to Uganda and go and see the gorillas. So you can combine it all to one big trip, and that's quite easy now. With the amount of light aircraft going across Africa, there's a really cool way of combining these different things. So it used to be very much you go to Kenya or you go to Rwanda or you go to wherever. Now you can actually combine these countries a lot easier than you used to be able to.
Yeah, it's funny. I've seen Rwanda advertised an awful lot on with Arsenal. I know you're a Spurs fan, Mark, but Arsenal have a sponsorship with Rwanda, and or they did. I think they still do. And of course, last year they had their African colour kit as well, which was black, greens, and reds, and everything promoted Africa. I mean, I've seen an awful lot of changes in the Rwanda and the Uganda tourism now. I see a lot more, even shorter breaks being done. People just going for 5 nights and stuff like this, as opposed to the long 10 and 14 and 21-day trips and things. And I think the beauty of Uganda and Rwanda as well, both of them together, is that they offer so many different opportunities compared to Botswana and Kenya and your other Southern Africa ones. These are greener destinations, and I think it's more jungle-fied that you imagine from the films of Tarzan and stuff like that. That's very much how I see these countries, and I think that they're fantastic. Anyway, do carry on.
You've got chimps. This was something I wasn't expecting when I was there, or I wasn't fully aware of that they have forests with chimps. And as part of it, you go there. But I'll be honest, it wasn't particularly high on my list of things to do. It doesn't get talked about particularly. And we had this phenomenal experience where, I mean, we were hiking again. You got to find them, and chimps are very hard to spot because they move incredibly quickly and up at some tall, the top of the 50-meter trees. You can't see them. And we were wandering around for a couple of hours, and you get these vague views of them in the distance, but nothing to get excited about. And then suddenly, they all, for no reason, we're about to leave, came running down the trees, and they all just came running down. And it's a bit like, the alien movies where aliens just appear all around you on Earth, and this is how the chimps landed. And then we're out with these chimps, and they've got their babies on their backs, and they're just there in front of you, and you're having this incredible experience. And it was something I hadn't expected at all. But that's a side where even the tourist board don't really talk about the chimps. They are so focused on the gorillas. But you can do that side of things as well. And so you're
See,
getting all these different things.
that would really appeal to me, Mark. I mean, I just think that would actually be the main highlight for me, was to go and see the chimpanzees. You know what I mean? And to actually see them flying around. And I would and the gorillas, maybe it's because I'm from Kent, and I'm used to going to Howlett's and Port Lynn, where they're famous for the gorillas and everything else. So I'm used to seeing gorillas. I grew up with gorillas, seeing them up close. But I think the chimpanzees, just hearing that story about them flying around and then suddenly all appearing, I think that's they're missing something on the tourist market. Because certainly from my point of view, if I was, you've already described for me a reason to go to these destinations. Is that Uganda and Rwanda, or is it just in Uganda where the
That's
chimps are?
just Uganda. Yeah, just that's
Okay,
just
yeah.
Uganda.
So that's
But
really interesting. So that's unique, really, for me. I'm listening to this and thinking, wow, I want to go and see the chimps, the gorillas, and then the other game that are walking around as well. Oh, fantastic. But that would be the highlight for me, definitely.
yeah, no, it was amazing. And again, I should probably point out, just so people are aware, Uganda and Rwanda aren't, I mean, we seem to be focused on it, but these are also more expensive countries to visit than Kenya. They do fall more in line with the Botswana pricing. Of course, there's cheaper ways of doing it. Lower your lodge standard and stuff, but like they generally have pitched themselves as higher priced properties, and even the permits. This is often what stops a lot of people going to Uganda, but it's just to be aware of the permit for the gorillas in Uganda, I believe, is $700 a person. I haven't checked it recently. It might have slightly changed, but it's $700 a person. Whereas the permit in Rwanda is about $1,500 a person. So it can these trips can rack up quite quickly, but it's just understanding that's part of it. And that's why, doing a shorter trip to Uganda or Rwanda, like you mentioned, people doing 3, 5 days, that may be one of the reasons for it. But now you can fly directly into Rwanda, it makes it so much easier.
I think this has been absolutely fantastic today, and unfortunately, we are running out of time today now. And and I know we said at the
Both
very beginning that we were going to cover Tanzania as well, but we will get Mark back on the show, and we'll get him back on the podcast, and we'll be talking about Tanzania and a lot of other destinations. It's been so insightful today. And what we wanted to do is, rather than trying to cover everything with you, listeners, quite vaguely, I think it's important today that what we decided to do is do less than we wanted to, but we've gone in such detail. Some of the knowledge you have is incredible, and I hope there's a lot of stuff that our listeners can take away today. And it's inspired me. I fell in love with Africa when I went to South Africa, and it's inspired me to go to Botswana, Kenya, Uganda, and Rwanda that we've discussed today as well. And I really want to at some point. So just before we kind of wrap up, I would like to ask you, Mark, if you've got kind of five top tips. So that could be against anything we've covered. It's about luggage, about the logistics, about the where to stay, your favorite location. If you were going to go for the first time, what would you do? What would you plan? So, in a kind of a nutshell, to summarize today's in five bullet points, what would your top five tips be for our listeners, Mark?
I think my five tips would be, in no particular order, research where you want to go. Each country does offer something a little bit different. Price ranges can be quite dramatic. So work out, what do you want to see? Is there a particular animal you want to see? Is there a particular place you want to see? Is there something you want to combine with your safari? So just go and talk to someone who actually understands these things, and do your research and work out where's best to go, because there's one safari isn't like another safari. So there are so many different types. Two goes back to the beginning, pack light. You don't need to take, as Wesley said, 17 different pairs of trousers for because you're away for 17 nights. Light clothes, khaki colors are generally fine. I mean, you don't have to, if you want to wear a bright yellow t-shirt, it's fine. No one's going to tell you off for it. But keep yourself light, and take a good sunscreen with you. Just go with the flow. Animals don't work on your time. As a friend of mine asked once, is it worth going to an expensive safari lodge? And I was like, well, the animals have no idea how much you paid. They will just be where they are. So just go with the flow. I've heard people moaning they haven't seen people seen X animal on a safari, but just there is wildlife. Remember, it's wild. Remember, they go where they want, when they want, and they will do what they want. And you're there to, to observe them. Then, in no other way. Number four, just be sure the lodge is the type of lodge you want. I talked about earlier about, making sure you're going to the right country in the right park. Lodges vary so much. And just because something is a 3-star, 4-star, or 5-star, the difference between, not just the stars, but other ones at the same level or other ones in the same price category. Some will include drinks, for example, all drinks. Some won't include drinks, and you're paying the same price. So you just need to work out what's best for you there. And tip five, essentially maximize your time. And by that I mean don't try and see everything. Like Kenya is particularly good for lots of different national parks, but you don't want to spend all your time flying between them or driving between them or getting the train or however it is. Sometimes you might be better off spending an extra day in a park than going off to another park. And I know that from personal experience because I used to be, let's just see every single park in one go. So I think there would be a good bunch of tips to get you started with.
I think that's absolutely incredible. So anybody listening, we do have articles on safaris if you wanted to have a look. So go to purevacations.com, and also sign up to our newsletter as well. So on purevacations.com, you'll see a big button at the top to sign up. Do that, and we will also be sending you lots of other things. Subscribe to the podcast, and again, you'll get an update then. When we get Mark back on, you'll see the next safari episode come up then. So, again, Mark, last words of wisdom to our listeners. How can they check out your website and how can they get in touch with you?
So my website is www.gobbleuk.co.uk. That's the easiest way. I am on LinkedIn as well, just under Mark Young. I think I have a Gobble link on there as well, but I'm don't really use that one. But yeah, Mark Young on LinkedIn or Gobble is probably the best way to hear from me.
That's fantastic. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on today, Mark. And Wesley, any final words from yourself?
No, just really, I think that we've covered an awful lot today, and we haven't gone into the depth of Rwanda, and we certainly didn't get to Tanzania, which we'd hoped to. But I think what we can do is I'm excited to get Mark back again, perhaps two or three times actually, because he has got so many products and so much knowledge, and we really need to be bringing him in on a regular basis, I think, to cover some of this information, because I think the listeners will enjoy understanding it.
I completely agree and couldn't said it better myself. So yeah, you will be back, Mark, and to our listeners. You will be hearing Mark and we will be going into some more destinations in deeper detail. But like I said, do subscribe. That way you'll get notified of when Mark is back on. Do check out our website, purevacations.com. And other than that, I just want to say thank you so much for all your time today, for listening. We wouldn't be here without you listeners. So we are incredibly grateful and we hope that we've inspired you today. So other than that, just want to say hope you have a lovely, lovely rest of your day. Have a lovely rest of your week. And we look forward to speaking to you all very, very soon in episode 5. So thank you so much, everybody. Bye bye.
As the sun sets on another journey, we fold our maps, pack our memories, and get ready for the next adventure. Every voyage may come to an end, but the stories, they linger, resonating in our hearts. Remember, every destination is a doorway to a new experience, a new story. Keep exploring and keep dreaming. This has been Pure Vacations with your hosts, Wesley Baker and Dan Pratt. Until next time, let your heart wander and your feet will follow.